Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey, everybody, it's Angela, and I'm here with John and Jim, and today we're talking about one of our favorite topics, and that is the child attorney's role in acting as lead counsel. And what we mean by that really is taking ownership for the direction and pace of the case. Here at True North, we believe that advocacy is the answer to a lot of the problems with child welfare. And our approach to that is called permanency-focused advocacy. There are multiple principles involved in that, but we think that the one that has the greatest impact of all is really a shift in perspective. And that is really, as a child's attorney, seeing yourself in the role of lead counsel. And we're going to explain that a little more throughout the podcast, but this is one that we're really excited to talk about today.
So let's think about this concept for a second. When we say lead counsel, what do you think of? Maybe the person on the trial team who's doing all the witness examination, or the lead prosecutor in the criminal case. In many cases, it's very clear who the lead counsels are. In a civil case, it's the petitioner's counsel and the respondent's counsel. But those cases are titled petitioner v. respondent. In a criminal case, it's going to be the prosecutor and the defense attorney, but those cases are state versus defendant. What about a case that's styled in the interest of a child? I think you probably see where we're going here. Is it going to be the attorney for the agency who's lead counsel in our dependency cases? We're sure that in many areas they assume that role. When the case is called, the judge turns to the attorney for the agency for a status on the case, and that makes sense, of course. They file the petitions, the case plans, the review hearing reports. They get the discovery out. But we can also tell you there's a limit to what agency attorneys can do. The job of an agency attorney is to represent the state, whose interest is to protect the children of the state, and that gets done by keeping that machine running. Where those petitions are filed, those case plans are completed, discovery's out, reasonable effort findings are made, etc., etc. What used to be paper, paper, and more paper, now it's largely digital paper. But same idea. Agency attorneys have a different client than the child. And that client, usually a large bureaucracy that has needs of its own, many of which are irrelevant to the child and sometimes even counter to the child's interest, mostly sometimes irrelevant to the child's interests or not as focused on the child's interests. So this is why the child has an attorney too. So what's your position in this case? This is going to be confusing for a lot of practitioners, especially new ones, because you enter a dependency case and it seems like any other adversarial proceeding, right? It's state versus parents, right? But wrong, it's not. Let's look at this from the perspective of a child, okay? I'm a child. I woke up in a strange place today, and by this afternoon, my name will be on the docket at a big building downtown that I didn't even know existed. Why is my name on that docket? Am I in trouble? And when am I going to see my mom again? Is she in trouble? Everyone is so nice to me and says not to worry, but I'm in over my head, and yes, I'm starting to freak out a little bit. As a matter of fact, I think I will probably remember this week for the rest of my life. Okay, so that's who your client is. A kid who just got sucked into the most life-changing, world-shaking legal case of their entire life. Let's flip the script, okay, for a second. Same little kid. Or, you know what? Let's take me. I'm on the playground as the little guy. We're playing kickball, which is like soccer in Cleveland, but you play it on concrete instead of grass and with a rubber ball. So I see the ball in front of me. I reach for the ball. And then suddenly the ball is gone and there is a foot where the ball used to be of a sixth grader who was about to kick the ball. But I moved the ball. Here comes the foot. Foot hits me right above the eye and there is my blood. For the first real time in my life, my blood is outside of my body. And lots of it, okay? So I immediately think, I'm in over my head here. Mom is not going to be able to put a Band-Aid on this. I'm starting to freak out a little bit. And as a matter of fact, I think I will probably remember this day for the rest of my life. And I actually do. Not that that is any kind of serious childhood trauma, but I do remember that day. I get to the hospital, right? And I get assigned a doctor, a person with a terminal degree who knew how to help me with my problem. Could he change that it happened? No. Could he make it so I would not have a scar from that day? No, I have a scar. Did he stop the bleeding and help me heal? Yes. When a kid is assigned an attorney, it's you. It's you who has to stop the bleeding and start the healing.
So one of the reasons we like that metaphor is because everyone knows the role of a doctor when they are brought in to help a child. And the role of the child's attorney is a little different. And the reality of what we see out there is that in many parts of the country, the child's attorney's role has really been sitting back and watching the state and parent volley back and forth and sort of stepping in when needed or asking questions about what's in the child's best interest, which is very, very different than what we're talking about today. We do not want to be a spectator at a tennis match. The whole legal system is designed for two competing parties. Everyone, even the judge, is used to the two parties volleying back and forth. But the child is the center of the case. Remember, it is styled in the name of your client. This makes you lead counsel. It's literally your client's case. It is their life and well-being that is at stake. And this is a big shift that we want children's attorneys to make. It really doesn't matter who filed the case or who else has constitutional rights at stake. This case is about your client.
Right. So let's talk about what it looks like to be lead counsel. We're not saying that you should take over the case from the agency attorney or the parent's attorney, right? They both have important jobs to do. And the better they do their jobs, the easier our job is. But as the child's attorney, you have some crucial functions you can perform as lead counsel. Number one, talk to the patient, right? It's your job to let the child know what is going on without sugarcoating it or traumatizing them. That's why when I spoke earlier, I talked about how everyone is so nice to me, but I still don't know what's happening. And you see that a lot with your clients when you first meet them, right? They've met maybe 10 people before they finally meet me, and everyone has talked to them, but no one has really shared important information with them. So your job is to honestly educate them in a developmentally appropriate manner as to what is happening, what they can expect to happen next, and if possible, timeframes for that. You can remove at least some of the fear from the situation by being the person who has seen this before. My little trip to the ER. When I went to the ER, the doctor who would stitch up my forehead did not say, "Holy, what? That's a lot of blood." No, he knew exactly what to do. He'd been there before, and I kind of sensed that, right? And the nurses too. They'd all been there before. Studied and prepared for that moment. I had not, but the knowledge that he had clearly put me somewhat more at ease. So you've got to talk to your client. Number two, make your own diagnosis, right? Don't just let the state's petition tell you what happened. Don't stop there, okay? Listen to what the parents say and listen through what they say, right? I mean, don't dismiss what they say because it sounds like excuses. It sounds sometimes like a lot of people use the words addict speak or things like that. Listen through what they're saying for the truth of what they're saying or what their point is that they're trying to get across. And maybe they are so defensive or angry or unable to express what they're trying to say. Listen for that. It's very important. And try to get to that truth and give it some worth and value. Listen to what the child says, even if they can't talk. Watch how they're interacting with mom and dad, with foster parents. Watch how they transition from visitation back to the foster home or caregiver's home. That's communication too. They may be telling you something. Do your own investigation. Read the backstory on the family. Know the backstory and the history of the family because that informs what has happened here. And arrive at your own independent conclusions about the case. Don't just latch on to what the state is doing and assume that everything they're doing is accurate. Jim.
Yeah.
after you arrive at your own independent conclusions, then develop your own treatment plan. Now, the beauty of this is you don't have to write it all out in a boilerplate document, but don't just take the case plan you're given, sign it, and turn it back over to the state to file with the court. Read it critically and have your own treatment plan in your mind for where you think this case should go. Compare it to what the case plan contains that the state's given you. You want to apply your own independent analysis to the tasks that these parents are being given. Is there anything missing? Are we sweeping any problems under the rug, trying to send kids home knowing they're going to eventually return? Is there superfluous stuff in there that they don't need to be doing? Ask the question, why is that task there? Keep your analysis substantive, not performative. Just because it's always there is not a reason to give a task. And that includes some of the standards that we see all the time, like parenting. So keep an eye on that stuff. Your role as lead counsel is critical here because the agency attorney may be teeing the case up for TPR, or maybe they're skimping on certain tasks as a bargaining tool to get a consent, or even save the agency money on expensive evaluations that might be needed. Look for that. Things like independent medical evaluations for certain conditions that parents may need treatment for. They're not offered a lot because in some areas they're very expensive and there's not contracts with those providers. So watch for stuff like that. That means sometimes going outside the conventional box of contracted providers. Parents' counsel may be looking for the absolute shortest route to reunification. And a lot of parents' counsel see that as their job. And there's little regard sometimes for whether or not the underlying problem is going to be addressed. That's two competing interests we just described there, the agency attorney, the parent's attorney. Only you can come at it exclusively on behalf of the child because you don't serve the state or the parent. And don't forget the services for the child. You want to have in your mind the treatment plan for the child as well. Make sure everything that your kid needs is included there. Contact with the parents, sibling contact, extended family contact. Sometimes that's a huge part of kids' lives. You know, kids can come into care and lose contact with an uncle or a grandmother that they were seeing every other weekend, or maybe seeing grandma for church every weekend, and they lose that. School placement is huge, so keep an eye on that. Most case plans are a contract between the parent and the state as to what has to be performed in order to get the kid back. But a case plan is more than just performative. It's literally a plan for the case. And we've got to keep it substantive. It's your client's case and they should be a big part of the plan. So think about what's the plan to get them through this quickly and safely with the least amount of damage. Next step is you're going to have to sometimes be the person to give the medicine or prescribe the actual treatment. And that's right. Just like a doctor sometimes has to say, okay, this is going to hurt a little bit. You might have to do the same thing. You might have to be the one to drag people back into court and ask the court to hold someone in contempt or compel them to do what the case plan says. You might have to be the one to go to court and make it happen in some cases. A real concrete example of where the lead counsel steps in. There's a vacuum very often during the case between review hearings, between court hearings, and that's where you've got to step in and lead sometimes to keep months from going by where problems aren't being addressed, where the parents are drifting off course and no one is pulling them back. But you might also end up being the one to get the family home again. The only way to stop the bleeding and start the healing is to deliver the medicine, and that can be anything from a little Advil to surgery. But you get the picture. We've hammered this medical analogy to death here. You've been assigned the child's case. You're the one who's got to stop the bleeding and start the healing. We have an attorney who literally was dealing with a case where mother did not want the 15-year-old son home at this time. Department was willing to take the child into foster care. Child was willing to go. And the case was careening towards a dependency trial. Now, why on those facts would a case be heading towards a trial? No good reason. So it was the child's attorney's job to step in and be the connective tissue and settle the case, change the tone and tenor of the conversation. And that's an important role for a child's attorney, to be the connective tissue. Don't buy into the complaint that there's too many cooks in the kitchen, because that's a large complaint against children's attorneys. Oh no, we'll have another attorney. There's too many cooks in the kitchen already. Step into a real quality restaurant. You know what? There's a ton of cooks in there. but there's one executive chef, and he's not jockeying for position at the grill. He's walking around making sure everything is done to a certain standard and everything is moving in a way that serves the mission. And that's the role of the child's attorney. Angela, I think this is probably one of the most important things that we teach, and it can't be said enough, really.
Yeah, and I like that analogy, too. There's so many ways to look at it. I think we're always looking for analogies because what we do truly is unique. As we pointed out at the beginning, you know, every other system, every, you know, plaintiff, defendant, all of those things are so clear. And so we're trying to come up with different ways for you to think about it. But I did, as we're wrapping up, what I wanted to say is that we do understand, and this was the case when I practiced, that a lot of you walk into a courtroom culture where it is kind of like a tennis match. And the expectations of the child's attorney are different. People aren't used to seeing the child's attorney step in and question everything and file motions and do all of that. So we understand that this can be a really hard shift. But what the reason we're talking about it again and independently is that it is one of the most important shifts you can make in your practice when you see the case as yours and your client's and you take that approach with it. And the last thing that I wanted to point out as well, and I think we've been clear that we're not talking about doing the agency attorney's job or the parent's attorney's job, but I think the most significant thing that we saw when we were consulting in a state recently and the biggest change was that the child's attorney was no longer in the role of waiting for parents to fail. And it's an easy thing to do as you watch the case unfold, the department's providing services, but as the child's attorney, the vast majority of the time, the goal is to get the child home. And so whatever it takes to do that, that's your job too. And so I hope that this has been a way to kind of present this to you that is new and different, and that it will give you some inspiration to really think about shifting your perspective into that of lead counsel and starting to take steps to move your cases forward. Thanks, everybody, so much for listening. And as you go about your day and open your next file, I hope you'll really think about this shift in perspective. You are lead counsel, and you can do this. And if you want to learn more, please come to our website. It's childrenswithanslaw.org.
You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.